B-Pod Studios.
Stay with us and we're going to show you how to take dead aim.
Take dead aim.
The importance of taking dead aim.
Welcome to Taking Dead Aim, a show dedicated to the game of golf and the people who play it in the Carolinas and around the world. Taking Dead Aim is a presentation of RBC Wealth Management and Academy Sports and Outdoors. And now, here's your host, a man who once described Caddyshack as an awesome documentary, Charlie Nance.
Well, hello there. Welcome back. Once again, we are Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter at CLT underscore golf guy. This week, well, this week is one that I look forward to every year. You know, every town has an event or two that they can really hang their hat on. Some bigger than others because some towns are bigger than others. For example, growing up in Houston, Texas, it was the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo. Still one of the, if not the biggest rodeo in the world. Living in Augusta, Georgia, of course, the Masters. Living in Birmingham, Alabama, it was the annual race weeks at Talladega. And here in the Queen City, at this point, there's no question in my mind, it is the Wells Fargo Championship contested at beautiful Quail Hollow Club. Now, I'd be lying if I didn't say that I'm somewhat disappointed this year. Look, it appeared to all involved, not just with the Wells Fargo Championship, but with the PGA Tour, that one Tiger Woods would be making his return to the tour here this week following that historic fifth Masters win and 15th major championship. However, he chose not to, saying he needed more rest before the PGA Championship in a couple of weeks. And look, when your back has had those four surgeries and whatever else has happened to him, I'm going to leave that up to him. Also, Justin Thomas, who less than 2 years ago won his first major championship here when the PGA was held at Quail, he had to pull out of the tournament due to a sore wrist. Now, those are two really big names that we're going to miss. However, the likes of Phil Mickelson, who treats this tournament like a personal ATM machine, two-time tournament winner Rory McIlroy and defending champion Jason Day, highlight a more than worthy field this week. And I invite all of you to head out there. Support this event. This is the event which our city shines like it does at no other annually, in my opinion. This week, we're all about the Wells Fargo Championship. Ron Green Jr. from the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer will join us, as will Jason Sobel of the Action Network, to talk not just about this week, but the impact that gambling will soon have on the game. You'll want to pay attention to that. But we begin today with a bucket list conversation. To me, what Arnold Palmer was to the men's game, Nancy Lopez is to the women's game. Here's just a few of her accomplishments. She won the New Mexico Women's Amateur at age 12. 12. The U.S. Girls Junior in 1972 and 1974 at ages 15 and 17, respectively. Shortly after graduation from high school, she played in the U.S. Women's Open as an amateur, first in 1974 and again in 1975, where she tied for second. When she turned pro, she won 9 events in her rookie season, including 5 in a row. She was a 3-time major champion, 4-time player of the year, and 3-time leading money winner. She was elected to the World Golf Hall of Fame in 1987. Just listing some of those accomplishments, I'm about out of breath. Nancy Lopez retired in 2003, and since then has become one of golf's greatest ambassadors. Her smile and warmth are infectious, and to speak with her for the first time is like speaking to someone you've known your whole life. That is a gift, and she's got it in spades. In the past couple of years, she's been relegated to the sidelines with debilitating knee pain. Following the successful replacement of both knees, she reemerged, if you will, as a player, being a part of the ceremonial first tee shot at the inaugural Augusta National Women's Amateur. This week, she was out at the Wells Fargo Championship for their first ever Women's Day conducting a clinic. And it was beyond a pleasure to spend a few minutes with the great Nancy Lopez. First off, how goes the bionic reconstruction of your knees?
You know, it's awesome. I have two new knees. I got one in 2017 and then November 2018. And, you know, for 20 years, I was kind of growing into pain. It just got worse and worse. And finally, after having two knee replacements, I get up in the morning. I look forward to going out to the golf course and not hurting at all. It's just awesome.
You know, people talk about how when you have that kind of pain, your paradigm for what feels good becomes completely skewed. And then all of a sudden, when the pain goes away, I mean, you have to recover from the pain of surgery. But once that knee pain's gone, you go, oh, wow, I know what it's like to feel good again.
Well, you know, it's almost mind-boggling. My mind says, I'm not hurting. Wow, what's going on? It's like it's hard to accept not hurting anymore. I wake up in the morning. When you're bone on bone every day, your body hurts from the knees up. You don't realize that now that I have padding, I guess you could call it, I don't hurt. My body doesn't hurt. I haven't taken any Advil or any pain, anything like that, forever since I've had my knees done. And it's just so weird.
Well, if you need any, I've got a pharmacy in my golf bag right now.
Well, you know, I used to call Advil a golf candy, but I don't take it anymore. And it's just weird not taking it too. And learning to walk again and learning to just walk up hills. I have to think about, bend your knee, push up, because I didn't do it for so long. And swinging right now, I'm hitting the ball really good, but I know I can pick up at least 10 more yards, but I haven't used my legs in so long because of the pain. It was a lot of upper body, and I got used to swinging that way, and I was fine, but distance-wise, I wasn't. And now I'm watching everybody swing. I'm learning, trying to get the pressure back in the right points at a certain time in my swing, and that's hard because there's nothing real, even though it looks active, I don't think it's as active, the lower body, as it used to be.
Well, and one thing that I know about that surgery is that your body's reaction to the trauma of the surgery is your muscles atrophy almost instantly. And so whereas you've been walking golf courses your whole life and leg tone has never been an issue, all of a sudden you have to rebuild and retrain all those muscles.
Absolutely. I mean, I tried, I haven't played and walked a golf course since about 2002. I've been on a golf cart. And I get crazy when people say that golfers aren't athletes. Try and walk 6 days in competition on any golf course, swinging a golf club. I mean, it's hard just to walk for me right now, to walk 18 holes. I walked 9 the other day at Pinehurst and played 9 and walked, and it was amazing. I had no knee pain, but my feet were killing me.
Hall of Famer Nancy Lopez is our guest taking Dead Aim. Thank you for bringing up Pinehurst. I was crushed last year. I was unaware of your knee situation last year, and I was crushed at the inaugural Ladies Senior Open. And I'm like, you can't have this without Nancy Lopez. And then are we going to see you this year?
I will not be there this year. You know, I was there last year.
Well, you were there, but not competing.
Right. No, not competing. Because I wanted to be a part of it. And it was such a thrill for me to announce the players on the first tee because, they haven't had a place to play like a women's U.S. Senior Open in many years. And all my fellow professionals, I was so proud to be there to watch them tee off in an inaugural event that should have happened, I was hoping, many years ago when I really could still play. And watching them and them coming up and saying, I'm so nervous. And I said, I'm so nervous too for you. I'm kind of glad I'm not playing because of the pressure of that kind of competition. We're not used to that anymore. So because I haven't walked and played 18 in a long time, I would have to really get in great shape to play, because if I made the cut, I'd have to play the weekend. I don't know if I could make it yet. So, my goal may be to play next year, but, I don't want to just finish. I want to finish high. And to do that, it's going to take a lot of endurance and motivation and a lot of things that I did for almost 30 years on the LPGA Tour. And I just don't know if I want to do that anymore.
Hall of Famer Nancy Lopez is our guest taking Dead Aim. Thank you for bringing up inaugural events. I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about Augusta a few weeks ago. I was talking with someone coming in to Quail this morning that I think it's impossible to oversell the importance of that day, and to see you and Annika and Sayri and Lorena hit that first shot at Augusta National. What was going on? It had to seem like it wasn't real right up until the point when it was.
You're absolutely right. The excitement of that event. I mean, when Fred Ridley announced last year they were going to have this event, but, everyone at Augusta, we were at Augusta. They said, Nancy, you've got to get in front of the television. We're making an announcement. I'm like, wow, what are they going to announce? And when he announced that, I'm like, okay, visually I'm thinking I'm watching television and I'm watching women play in a tournament at Augusta National and they're taking divots and they're hitting shots. It didn't compute. I was like, what? I'm like, this is awesome. Can I turn amateur? I mean, it was like, I wanted to play. So it was a thrill to be a part of it. When they asked me and Annika and Sari and Lorena to be a part of it, we were thrilled, getting ready for it, participating with the little amateurs and how thrilled they were. And all of them got to play in the practice round on Friday, even if they missed the cut. They were so excited. And it was really history being made that day. And for Augusta National, my hat's off to them because they promote amateur golf, which is just tremendous. That's where golf needs to always grow. But when we were preparing and, who was going to hit first, when they told Sari she was hitting first, she was like, oh, no, I don't want to hit first. The nerves that was happening between us four sitting there and going, the world of women's golf, amateur golf, is on our shoulders. And of course, all of us being very competitive, we're like, I want to hit it better than you. I want to hit it better than all three of them.
I'm glad you brought that up because there were two things that struck me as you went to hit that first tee shot. Just the moment itself, how great this is. And these are four tremendous, tremendous historical ladies golfers. And the first thing that struck me about that was there never seems to be the conversation. The ladies' professional golf world does not get bogged down in who's the greatest of all time. I never hear that discussion. What I hear from all of you is deep, profound respect for each and every one and the era they played and what their contribution was to the game. Why do you think that is, whereas the men, we get bogged down in that?
I don't know that. I'm totally respect those three women that I hit that tee shot with. I was proud to be there with them. And, walking down the little aisle, coming down like Arnold, Jack, and Gary always have done for so many years, and then walking through the little gate to the first tee and that opening up, and you're like, holy cow, we're here. And it was such a great, I get chills right now thinking about, very emotional. But we all wanted to hit that shot pure. We didn't care how far it went, but we wanted to make sure it was the pure shot. And the excitement of being out there in front of that beautiful crowd and the excitement of these young players coming and getting involved in an event that they will never forget, it was just awesome.
Get you out of here on this because they're taking you away. But I had to ask, that moment right before you hit the shot, there was one thing that I noticed, and I mentioned off air a few minutes ago that you have a smile that lights up the Texas sky, and I knew that it would light up the Georgia sky that day. But that moment when you put a peg in the ground, all of a sudden that veneer disappeared and it got real in a hurry. We saw the steely-eyed competitor again. When you've competed at a high level for so long and then you've been away from, how do you satisfy that competitive Jones in your life? Because it's in your DNA. You can't turn it off. What have you done?
It's still not off. I still want to hit a great shot. I still want to make the putt. And, that day I was nervous. But when I put the tee in the ground, I got back into my focus mode and I hit the shot as good as I wanted to. So it was exciting.
That lady is the total package. I hope to be able to speak with her again more in depth very soon. There may be better women's golfers by record or achievement, but there are none who are better people than her. Hall of Famer, the great, legendary Nancy Lopez. And up next, where are we now with gambling in the game of golf? Action Network's Jason Sobel takes dead aim at that topic. And, of course, the Wells Fargo Championship, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Hey, we're
We're Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. Jason Sobel is one of the hardest working riders in golf. I truly have trouble finding weeks when he's not on the road covering the tour. In the past, he's been with ESPN and the Golf Channel, but about a year ago, started on a new professional adventure, and that's where we pick up this conversation from the Wells Fargo Championship earlier this week.
So first off, it's been a while since we've talked, and I have trouble keeping up with you sometimes. You're the hardest working man in golf, but what are you doing and who are you with now?
I've been with a place called the Action Network for a little over a year now. Still a new startup, but growing bigger every single day, and we're doing a lot of good stuff. More in terms of betting and fantasy from that perspective, but honestly, still covering the game as I have for the last 15 years. In fact, we're sitting right now in front of my laptop where I'm working on a story that has absolutely nothing to do with gambling, nothing to do with fantasy, nothing to do with anything like that. It's just a really good golf story, and it's worth telling.
Now, my experience with gambling in the world of golf was going over to the Open Championship and walking into Ladbrokes and laying down a quid or two. I mean, you don't even know what you're doing. You just say, oh, cool. How is gambling going to become a part of the PGA Tour or a part of our thinking about the tour?
How much time do we have? I mean, this is going to be huge. It really is. With every state, and we're up to 9 now, where sports gambling is legal, with every state that it becomes legal, golf opens up so many different possibilities, so many different combinations of things to gamble on. I think the general public out there thinks, okay, well, I'm going to pick Webb Simpson at 20-1 this week, and that's my pick for the week, and I hope he wins and I'll make some money. There are so many different combinations from top 5, top 10, top 20 type bets, matchup betting, daily fantasy, which is obviously another form of betting. There are so many. Live betting on golf is going to be huge. You're going to see a ton of betting on what's going on in between shots, just because it's a sport that's built for it. In the NBA, if you want to live bet on a game, well, by the time you actually get the bet in, the score might have changed and the odds are going to change, and it just moves a little too quickly. Whereas in golf, if there's 10 minutes in between a shot, you have 10 minutes to figure out, I think he's going to make birdie on the next hole, I think his opponent's going to make a bogey, I think this is going to happen, and here's where I want to put my money. So, like I said, it's going to be huge just because of all the different combinations.
Two more questions about gambling real quick. Are we going to see a day where we walk in the gates to the Wells Fargo Championship and there's an actual kiosk where you can place bets?
I think you'll see that, and I think as soon as you see it, it'll become outdated, because what's going to happen is you're going to have it in your pocket. You're going to have it on your phone, so it's no different than having payphones at a golf tournament where you say, okay, that can come in handy and I might need that in case my phone dies, but quite honestly, I've got a phone in my pocket. I don't need to go to a kiosk to bet because I can just do it on my phone, which I do all the time.
So theoretically, the way it could work is you're watching the Masters on TV, Tiger's second shot at 11 from the woods on Sunday, and 4-1 odds that he's able to put this on the green. 20-1, he gets it within 3 feet. It's going to be like that?
Very much so. You may see, and I've heard little leaks of this, that the green may look like a tic-tac-toe board. And you can look at it and say, well, it's 4-1 to be on the back left, and it's 2-1 to be right in the center of the green, and it's even money to miss the green altogether. And you're going to be able to bet on where a ball goes on the green or where it misses off the green or something. The possibilities, like I said, are honestly endless.
Jason Sobel with the Action Network is our guest, Taking Dead Aim. Let's get back to just covering the game. Enough about gambling. Following you on Twitter, as I do, you really are passionate, I think, about finding the good story. You mentioned this week about Ryan Palmer. I had no idea, but it reminded me of when Billy Herschel came out about his wife a couple of years ago and her troubles. There's so many of these guys that you don't really know about that have these things going on in their life that aren't publicized, but then when things go well for them, you just feel great, don't you?
Yeah, sure. I mean, these guys are people. They are sort of normal guys who are better than you and I at hitting a golf ball and getting into a hole in fewer shots than the rest of the general public. But that does not mean that they're immune to family issues. They're immune to problems in everyday life. They're immune to other situations that are not ideal. And so it's up to us as these journalists to tell these stories and to let the general public know kind of what's going on with these guys. And I always say that And this is for the people out there who think they know a lot about golf. I always say I've been doing this for a long time. I know about 1% of what's going on out here on a regular basis. If I know that much, most other people know even less. So it's tough to find those stories. I think it's important for us to go find those stories and tell those stories and let the public know that these guys aren't just robot golfers. They're actual people.
There's been another or several different stories that I've liked over the years, over this year, and I know it got started early. I was fascinated and still am somewhat by just watching Cameron Champ. I don't know what's going to happen with this kid, but, you know, there's times that he just looks like, oh, my gosh, this is the way golf is going to change. The story with CT Pan a couple of weeks ago, didn't even really want to play any. He had an event that he was doing in his home, and his wife's like, no, you're going to go play, and he turns out and wins. You mentioned Ryan Palmer last week. What are some other stories that have happened on the PGA Tour other than the big one at Augusta that we'll get to here in a second? What are some other stories this year that you've really enjoyed?
You're putting me on the spot now. I mean, those are some good ones right there. God, so much stuff blends together. I really need to sit down and honestly, like, that needs to be a project where I take a couple of hours and sit down and go through everything. Being on the spot right there, that's... Boy, I'm trying to think of one. There's been a couple... The Corey Connors story was really good, winning... in Texas, right before the match. He was a Monday qualifier, got in a playoff on Monday just to get into the tournament, goes and wins the tournament, gets into the Masters, actually makes the cut and plays pretty well that week. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that, does it?
No, and he got the best bear hug straddle from the wife on the 18th green that we've had in a long, long time, so that was really good. Jason Sobel with the Action Network is our guest taking Dead Aim. All right, since he won the Masters, and then didn't show up here at Wells Fargo for the first time in several years, the story is more about who is not here than who is here. All that is old is new again.
Yeah, once again, I mean, Tiger is the talk of golf, and, you know, everything revolves around Tiger once again for good reason. You know, there were probably some times over the years when I think the public, the general public, chafed at all the Tiger stories, all the Tiger questions, all the Tiger discussions when he wasn't playing his best golf, but you can't anymore. Right now, he is the biggest thing in the game, and there's not a close number two. So you look at the field here this week, and you say, oh, Rory McIlroy, obviously the favorite, and I think he's going to have a really good week. Jason Day, the defending champion. But you're right, the story is more about who isn't here. I thought Tiger was going to play. I thought he'd want to get in one more tournament in between the Masters and the PGA in a couple of weeks, but obviously he doesn't feel like he needs it, and I don't think he'll go to the PGA at Bethpage any less prepared than he would have if he had played this week anyway. So it's very obvious to me, and should be obvious to everybody, which tournaments mean the most to Tiger right now, and those are the ones he's going to rest up for and get ready for.
Do you think we should sort of prepare ourselves for an almost Ben Hogan type schedule after after the car wreck? He never played more than seven tournaments in a given year. Now, I know the PGA Tour probably has rules that prohibit him doing that, but you know, we were used to 15, 16 tournaments a year. Should we get used to 10, 11?
Yes. In a word, yes. It'll come down to that. I don't think it'll ever be seven. And really, if he doesn't play 15 PGA Tour events, because he's a lifetime member, because he's got status in so many different categories, basically, he might lose voting rights on certain things being a player, which I'm not sure he was voting much anyway. So I don't think it matters a whole lot. And trust me, he's got enough influence where even if he's not voting, he can impart his wisdom on the powers that be. So that's not a big problem. But, yeah, I could see him playing the Torreys and the Bay Hills and the Memorials where he's played really well, playing in a couple of FedEx Cup events, especially the Tour Championship when he gets in, and then really just the WGC events and the majors. And you know, that's a decent enough schedule. Just those in there are probably close to 11 or 12 events. And, yeah, I'd say that's probably pretty close to what we're going to see from him over the next couple of years.
Do you think the Tiger effect is real? I do, in that, you know, it was easy for these kids to go out and say, oh, yeah, I'd like some of Tiger when he was in his prime, because they had never seen it. They had never walked the fairways on a Sunday with Tiger when he's in the lead and felt what that is like. Rory McIlroy last year at the Tour Championship and then again at the Match Play, this is one of the best golfers of all time. Rory McIlroy is a lock for the Hall of Fame, and I felt like he folded like a cheap suit. You know, the Sunday afternoon, the second night at Augusta, you had some of the best players in the world making incredibly stupid mistakes. And I think it was because of the mental fatigue that comes with playing with Tiger on Sunday. Do you buy that?
Not totally. I think Tiger is smarter in those situations, and he's more steeled in those situations than some other players are. So it doesn't surprise me that other players made mistakes, whereas Tiger didn't make those similar mistakes just because he has that experience. But I never quite bought into the intimidation factor. I remember speaking to players about it 10, 12, 15 years ago, and they'd tell me, look, I'm playing with Tiger Woods in the final pairing of a tournament, and he beats me. It's less about me being intimidated, more about him being really, really good and better than I am. And they would all admit that. And I think that's part of this is that, hey, sometimes he just plays really good golf and he used those experiences to his benefit and he's going to go out there and win golf tournaments. But I just never quite bought into the intimidation factor. Maybe it has something to do with more people in the gallery watching and more media inside the ropes, just more commotion and more stress and pressure. And I think Tiger deals with that better than anybody else, obviously, because he sees it every single time he tees it up. But I don't know that there's intimidation's a weird word. I just don't know that, you know, anybody's sort of scared of playing with Tiger. And I, you know, all these questions about whether players are careful what you wish for, you know, now that they get Tiger back and Tiger playing his best golf. I get the sense from every single one of them, they want to see Tiger playing his best golf and they want to take their best and try to go up against him and go beat him. And if they can't, they'll tip their cap to him and that's okay. But they want to beat Tiger at his best as opposed to beating an ailing older Tiger.
Perhaps you're right. Intimidation isn't the right word, but because they don't see it every week or every day, that it is just, it's a mental fatigue, a mental drain. You have to concentrate so much harder because when the gallery's 20 and 30 deep, as opposed to maybe one or two deep, it's a whole different vibe out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that we made a big deal about Tiger winning all 14 of his first 14 major championships while in the lead or sharing the lead going into the final round. And I think the bigger part of that is that Tiger has always won a major while being in the final group on Sunday afternoon. I think it was so important for him on Sunday at the Masters when they turned those groups into threesomes. And he was, instead of being in the penultimate group alongside Brooks Koepka, he was in the last group with Francesco Molinari and Tony Finau. And he was able to see everything in front of him as opposed to trying to look behind and calculate and figure out. And in those situations, I just think Tiger is much more strategic and has much more experience than anybody else. And obviously that helped him on Sunday at the Masters.
Get you out of here on this. Jason Sobel with the Action Network, our guest taking Dead Aim. Let's take it back to gambling for 1 second. It was a miserable display of golf. I'm talking about the match with Phil and Tiger over Thanksgiving weekend. But as I'm watching it, I'm seeing potential and I'm seeing the way that those kind of events, if not that event, they're here to stay, and they're just going to keep refining them in, probably in the silly season there before we get to something real, right?
Yeah, we're going to see a lot more of these, and whether it's two-on-two, whether it's a different kind of scoring format as opposed to just match play, whether there's more bets going on between the players, I think we're going to see a lot more of these type of matches with some big names involved. Obviously, if you get Tiger and Phil for the first one, and that, look, we can call it a failure because it wasn't great golf and because maybe not as many people watched. Look, they got paid. In their eyes, it's a success. And so if Tiger and Phil and other players can get paid doing these sort of one-offs in the silly season, the end months of the year, they're going to do it and they're going to get paid. And we're going to have something to watch when there's really no golf on. I don't have a problem with it at all.
Always opinionated, always informed, and again, one of the hardest working dudes covering the PGA Tour from the Action Network. That's Jason Sobel. He is a must follow on Twitter if you love the game of golf, at Jason Sobel, Sobel spelled S-O-B-E-L, at Jason Sobel, capital T-A-N. And when we return, should we be disappointed by who's not at the Wells Fargo Championship? Or be excited by who is there? Ron Green Jr. of the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer takes Dead Aim at that and more, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
We are Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. As much as what happens on the golf course will be the final sentence of the story of this year's Wells Fargo Championship, it is far from the main body. Ron Green Jr. of the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer joins us now.
Let's start with who's not here. And it really changed the narrative of this week when Tiger Woods didn't turn in his notice on Friday.
Yeah, I think that surprised a lot of people. In fact, I know it surprised a lot of people. Even down in Ponte Vedra, they were waiting for the announcement because they had the release ready, and then it didn't come. He decided he wasn't ready to play, and that's his prerogative, and I think we're going to see more and more of that. I don't think we're going to see him play but about 10 times before the playoffs start. He might add, there's some speculation he will add Minneapolis, but otherwise it's just going to be major championships till the FedEx Cup playoffs.
Should we prepare ourselves for not a complete Ben Hogan-like schedule? Because I don't think Hogan, after the injury, played more than 7 or 8 times in a given year. But should we expect, whereas Tiger used to play 15, 16 times a year, a 10, 11 times a year schedule?
Well, that might be PGA Tour type schedule. I mean, he's going to play in Japan. He's already announced that and play some matches. He'll play some, but yeah, I think he's going to sort of Roger Federer it and pick his spots and play majors, and that's fine. I mean, I think he might come back here. I know he was frustrated by the greens here last year, thought they were too slow. But I think maybe had he not won Augusta, it would be different. But I think all that came with winning Augusta and everything, that he just hadn't started back working at it, and so he wasn't ready, so he's not here.
He also has an arrangement with Golf TV, and not a lot of people are familiar with what Golf TV is because it doesn't come in on our system. What is it, and what is his involvement?
Well, it's an exclusivity deal. It's hard to explain, but he does exclusive content with them. I mean, there have been events this year where he chose not to talk to the media, but then went and did his Golf TV thing and then posted online. Now, you can follow it on social media. They'll post most of the stuff. And, in fact, last weekend he was doing stuff with them. He did a whole workout session with them, and then he played a practice round, and they basically streamed the practice round down at the Medalist and him hitting balls with Joey the caddy. So that's what made everybody more convinced he was coming to play, because he's out playing golf. But that's something Tiger has. Rory has it with Golf Pass, so you see it here. More and more that's coming, where these guys have exclusive media deals. Doesn't mean they won't talk to the regular media such as ourselves, but it's going that way. And when they have something they want to release or divulge or go into, that's where they're going to do it. And it will make it, I think, harder for us to tell stories. I know I have talked to the manager of one of the top players in the world about trying to just get a little time to talk about life outside of golf, and said, we'll tell that story, not you.
This is a slippery slope also in terms of, if the money's big enough for these guys to do these things on their own time and their own schedule, that they can just say, well, you know, if it's not a major, if it's not a WGC event, I just don't have to go play. I don't need it.
Well, I think if they don't play, they are suddenly their profile goes down. They're going to have to play some. I think the tour will be concerned about making sure they do media. It's not like the NBA where it's in your contract. You have to make yourself available to the media. Guys find clever ways around that. But, I just think there are now so many layers. Like when we are at a tournament, when they finish a round, there's about 5 layers before it gets to the general media between rights holders like a CBS, a Golf Channel, Sirius XM, PGA Tour Radio, sometimes Golf Channel. I've actually seen Golf Channel get 3 individual interviews for various shows before they come talk to the so-called regular media. Now, that's rare, but that's sort of the way it's, people are paying money, and they're paying money for access and other things, and so it's just a changing world.
Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer is our guest taking Dead Aim. Tiger Woods is not the only player that is not playing this year. You and I both, I think, are somewhat surprised by the lack of a strength of field. I think at the beginning of the year when we saw the Wells Fargo Championship's place on the schedule, we were salivating at what our field might be. Do you have any speculation as to why players are staying away from this tournament this week?
Well, I mean, I think had they not lost at the last minute, Tiger and Justin Thomas, and Justin Thomas has got a wrist injury, and I don't believe he's hit a golf ball since Augusta. So he can't play right now, or he's not playing right now. So you lose those two. I mean, you know, Dustin Johnson doesn't typically play here. Jordan Spieth doesn't play here. Yeah, their strength of field is down. Normally they would get 60 points for the winner in the World Golf Rankings equation, which is good, but this year it's only 50, which is speaks to the strength of the field. A lot of people got in. You're like, how'd they get in here? I don't know. I would have thought the date was good, but I know from talking to some managers and actually one high-ranking PGA Tour official, I don't think a lot of guys like the golf course anymore.
That's what I was going to ask you. I know that when the changes were made for the PGA Championship, there was a lot of grumbling and whatnot, but I figured that was just players at major championships grumbling. What did they see last year, or what didn't they see last year when they came back for the Wells Fargo Championship that has, you know, peeved them off?
I don't know quite what it is. I don't think they love some of the new holes. I know they hate the fourth hole still, even though they've changed it. They hate the 17th hole. By and large, they just think it's unfair. I heard one player say it and the 16th hole Memorial are the two worst holes on the PGA Tour. I don't know. It's long and hard. It's part of what they don't like. Now, they may shoot some good scores. I guess they've softened the fairway some. But, you know, it's a difficult golf course. It's, you know, you can go to some of these other places, and they're easier. I think that's some of it. Now, it is sort of a bomber's golf course. Not sort of. It is a bomber's golf course. So there's a lot of players that sort of works against. So they sort of check it off their list. I know guys who've said, you know, I tried it. It's just not for me. And so, you know, every tournament deals with some of that almost. But, yeah, it's a little disappointing it's not a stronger field this year than it is.
Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking Dead Aim. I was on the air when the tragedy occurred at Charlotte. How long did it take for the news to matriculate out to the golf course, and what was the reaction in the moment? What was sort of the feeling on the golf course out here?
I was not here when it happened. I was actually going to a dinner with some PGA Tour people, and it was, you know, all the conversation when we got there. So, I was driving, I was listening to all the updates and all that stuff. So, but I have talked to a couple players yesterday who were just, you know, immediately talking about, you know, how do we fix this? It keeps happening. And, you know, you hate to think we would become numb as a society to it, but it's just like, you've heard it so many times now, suddenly it's in our backyard or our front yard. It just, you know, it's heartbreaking to see the picture of the guy who tackled the shooter and all that. I mean, just it's the worst kind of nightmare thing. But, yeah, I mean, guys are talking about it. They were aware of it. A lot of people talking about it. They just sort of locked into the news that night and started watching the updates and everything because, you know, in a sense, it was playing out in real time. And, it did not go unnoticed, I'll say that.
As we're recording this conversation, round one is underway at Quail Hollow Club, and I noticed a lot of green ribbons on the caps of some of the players. There was some question to me as to what the response was going to be by the tour. The players think it's a really classy move.
Yeah, that's, you know, they, like I said, they're aware of this, and, yeah, that's a nice thing, the green ribbon, obviously, for the 49ers colors and all that. They do a nice job with, you know, we've seen it in various events for various reasons that, you know, they just sort of pin those things to make people aware. I mean, even to this day, Ricky Fowler's wearing a Jared Lau button on his cap still for his buddy who passed away a while back. But so, yeah, that's one way of remembering what's gone on.
Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking Dead Aim. I can't decide what I was more surprised by, Tiger Woods not being here when I was convinced that he would be, or I got to tell you, I was stunned at the announcement. I have thought and heard privately for years that at the end of this contract, Wells Fargo was going away as the sponsor, and there was another sponsor ready to come in, but that was not the case at the announcement made.
No, it's Wells Fargo for, was it 2024? Yeah. And so, I have heard since this tournament started that this was going to be the last contract. This was a short-term deal, and now here we are. What are we, 17 years in? So now it's going to move on out. You know, they're going to go, obviously, to TPC Potomac for 1 year during the President's Cup. The PGA Tour has invested a lot of money in that golf course, and that's an area which obviously is important to Wells Fargo.
So that was a move by the tour. I was wondering that because they no longer have an annual presence in Washington, D.C. Excuse me. Washington, D.C. is a major East Coast market, and I thought that they may have been behind that move.
I think they had some suggestive powers in that. I know they looked at some others. I think they liked being at Eagle Point, but logistically just too hard to make it work, I think, financially. And just, you know, if you were there, it's a great golf course, but trying to get everybody in and around, squeezed in, I don't think that worked the way they want. They didn't want to go back and do that. They wanted to go back to a big market. I mean, I'd be interested to know. I was talking to them some during where they were looking at. I don't know if they went to Philly or not because it doesn't have an annual event. I could have seen them going to a Aronimink, which would have been a really good thing. But, I mean, this is home for it. And obviously they're going to have the President's Cup, and that's a huge deal here. I had dinner with the guys who are running it. And they have a full-time guy who's living here for 4 years to run the President's Cup, work on it. I mean, it is going to become an enormous piece of sort of the community as it gets closer. It's still, he gave us 800 and something days away, so that's a little bit of a long countdown now. But, I mean, as it gets closer, once they get past this one in Australia this year, you know, they'll start doing things and raising the profile. So we got plenty of golf here. And just because the contract for this one ends in 2024, that doesn't mean that's the last golf that's coming here. There's more stuff in the pipeline.
So the PGA Tour already has, or the PGA of America, I guess, they run the Tour runs the President's Cup. They already have someone on site because I know the PGA of America, it was a two-year job for Jason Mingle, and he was just here for 2 years. They've already got someone here working on the President's Cup?
Yeah, Adam, I just had dinner with him the other night, and I forget his last name. But, yeah, he's here and working on things. Part of it's sales jobs. You know, they're trying to – you know, they've already done the rerouting of the golf course, how they're going to do all that. But first time they put somebody in a town, in a city for 4 years, and, you know, they know it's not the Ryder Cup, but they're trying to build it into a giant international event. It'll be interesting because it's the last weekend of September, first couple days of October. So as I recall, that's when college and football and NFL football will be going on as well. So, you know, it'll be going on in the midst of all that. But, I mean, it's going to be a huge thing. It will be it will bring so many people in and it gets so much worldwide attention. Hopefully by then the international team will be competitive, and you know, you got Tiger and Ernie Els as the captains this year. I'm guessing Jeff Ogilvy will be the captain of the international team, and then I don't know who's going to be in line for the American team.
You mentioned the rerouting of the golf course, right? There's been lots of speculation as to what that would look like and how it would be done. I think the average President and Ryder Cup match goes to hole 16. Well, that doesn't suit our purposes here. We want the Green Mile to be featured prominently in any Ryder Cup situation or a President's Cup situation. What is the routing of the golf course, or have you heard?
Yeah, it's been released. They're going to play it like normal, one through three. They'll play through the eighth hole. When you get to the eighth hole, they will walk over and go to the 12th tee. And they'll pick up the golf course from 12. So the 12th hole will be the ninth hole. Then they'll play around, and the 18th hole will be the 15th hole. Then if the matches continue, they will play the 10th hole, the 11th hole, then back up the ninth hole. They will get the matches to the Green Mile. But I remember being at Harding Park when they played the WGC match play out there, and you're thinking, your first thought is that 18th hole, which was not their true 18th hole, you're thinking, well, where are all the grandstands? I mean, there's like one tiny little grandstand for about 50 people, but so few matches get there, they didn't have anything. So it will be great for when they get the matches down to, you know, from 12th, 13th, 14th holes, and they're right in the midst of that Green Mile. That'll be really cool.
Get you out of here on this. Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking Dead Aim. If you are the people in charge of running the Wells Fargo Championship, and we know them all very well, you're looking at this year and you're going, okay, well, we need to strike a new chord with the players. If you're in their position, what is your sales pitch for 2020?
I think this is it sort of ebbs and flows. I think they will have a very good feel going forward. I think you know, they will listen to the players, get some feedback. It's interesting. I was in the locker room yesterday, and Mr. Harris and his son, Jono, and Mr. Fazio were going to have a private conference somewhere. I don't know if that what that means. I know they've got some plans here for the driving range and some other things. But, you know, I think, you know, in some ways you want to give the players what they want. In other ways, you know, you want to give them the test you want them to have to pass. You know, I think they, you know, yeah, this tournament built itself on all that. When it first started, all the amenities, all the Mercedes, all the trips for the wives and girlfriends, all that stuff. They don't do all that anymore. They've gotten away from that. It's a different era. But I think they will concentrate on service. And, you know, I think they think the golf course speaks for itself. And, you know, I think they will continue to try to make it better. And, you know, I don't know, with, you know, maybe some new management and everything, maybe players getting used to different people. But, you know, the new schedule, I think this year with the compacted schedule, you got 5 weeks between these first two major championships. I think players are trying to figure out what works for them. And I think in some cases what they're doing this year will change in the future. You know, it's just it's a bit of an unknown for them the way it is right now. So I think we'll continue to see it sort of shake out before guys sort of settle into something. And I still think this place is in a perfect spot on the schedule.
I share Ron Green Jr.'s optimism about the tournament spot on the calendar. It's a head scratcher for me and frankly a lot of people as to why the field this year was not the strength we're used to. Hopefully this was just a freak blip on the radar, and next year the Wells Fargo Championship will once again have a list of participants that matches the prestige of the course on which it is played. I'd also like to thank Jason Sobel of Action Sports and World Golf Hall of Famer Nancy Lopez for their time and insight this week. A reminder, a great way to stay in the loop with us is to be a regular consumer of our Facebook page. Be sure to like us on Facebook. Just search Taking Dead Aim. Also, our terrestrial radio times, again, have changed on Fox Sports Radio Charlotte 94.7 FM and 1660 AM. You can now hear us twice a weekend, Saturday mornings from 7 to 8 and Sunday mornings from 11 to noon. Weather-wise, well, you got some spotty showers here and there, perhaps, but nothing to keep you from going out to Quail Hollow and enjoying the Wells Fargo Championship, not to mention finding a way to tee it up and let this game continue to haunt your soul and break your heart. And if you do put a peg in the ground, remember to exhale, swing, pose, and keep it in the short grass. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at @CLT_golfguy, and I'll see you right here next week, Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.